choice you make, but it's, what we're suggesting is a combination of things.
As a resident, how could I better understand the logic of where things are being cut and where things are not being cut, and what things are being considered and what things are not being considered? So, I mean, yeah, you talked about busing, but I don't know, is it in-house or can we outsource? Can we save money here? Can we bid different ways? I don't know how many people are on staff. I don't know how many administrators there are. How many do we actually need? Can we cut other people and other monetarial material things to get to that $1 million?
Yeah,
how do I, as a resident, get that information so I feel that when you come to us maybe in 6 months from now, or not even that much, July 1st, maybe 2 weeks from now, and say we're eliminating 20 teaching positions, that was the actual correct decision to be made for our school district?
Well, we've been talking about this for a long time. And this is, again, the suddenness really is the state budget. That's the suddenness. We weren't anticipating a reduction in the tangible property elimination. We were not.
I completely understand all of that.
So that
where we go from here is where my concern is.
Yeah, mine too.
And so, I mean, that's what I want to make sure that we're making the best decisions for the school district, for the children. And at the town hall meeting, it was said we're going to eliminate 18 the first year and 37 for the next 3 years.
I thought you were referring to 37. You're exactly right. The 18 was something.
Well, I want to know that is the best decision.
The 37, let me talk about future reductions, staffing. That reduction, if you just take our deficit, our future deficit, and you just times the average cost of a staff member, that's how you meet that deficit. Now, that doesn't mean the future cuts, whether that makes sense or not. Perhaps there are other options in order to get to that 37. All that says is that in order to hit our deficit, that is what is going to have to be necessary if there are no other adjustments made to schedule.
But for July 1st, it's 18.
July 1st is the 18 to 20 positions. I don't know where else you could go besides that. Because of the suddenness, there just are no other income sources and no other revenue and no other expenses really to pull from. There's none.
Again, is there a way I can get that information?
Sure. I'll be more than willing to sit down with you at any time.
That's fine.
And kind of go through the rationale of what we've done.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, was there anybody else? All right. Then we're going to move along. I know all of you read our minutes from our last meeting, entertaining as they were. If there are no questions, comments, changes to those, I need a motion to approve them, please.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Mady?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Treasurer's report.
You've asked for permanent improvement information. I have that also, but this is the month for the five-year forecast, so we're going to do that. But before we do that, I just want to touch on C, the TIF and the permanent improvement funds to bond retirement. That is an accounting change that our auditors have asked us, and our bond broker said that's a better way of doing it, so that all the bonds are paid from the bond retirement fund instead of PI. So I'm asking for that. I have to have board approval for any type of transfer of funds out of general funds, so that's why we're doing that one. Are there any other questions on the monthly?
No, I had some questions regarding that, but no other ones.
Well, go ahead.
What account had this been paid from before?
Right out of that PI account.
And why are they wanting to change it now?
Different set of accountants.
The investment banker's the same?
Yes.
But he thinks it should be changed also?
Yeah, he agrees with him.
Does all of the money from the TIF agreements go into this permanent improvement fund?
Yes.
Why do they go into that particular fund?
It's set up so that we can keep it separate and watch it. And it, that's, you could have put it into a general fund account, but that's where it was set to go into at the beginning, so they just put it into PI to pay for the bonds. It could have been set to go into directly into a bond retirement fund. That's just where it was always set before. So really bonds are to be paid out of bond retirement funds, so that's why I agree with the accountants and the auditors.
So is the TIF, is it going to remain in the permanent improvement, or is it going to be something you're going to transfer every time?
I'm going to transfer it every time we have to make the payment twice a year from the PI to that. That way we can track that, what we're getting from the city as far as what we're getting from the TIF, keep an eye on that, and watch that to make sure as it goes up and down, and that's all part of that PI, to see if we're getting all of our money, what that amount of money should be. Is it going up as more money is going into that TIF, more businesses are going in or homes are going into the residential TIF? So
now, if the TIF agreement hadn't ever taken place and the taxes, would those have been divided up amongst all of the funds operating?
It would have been general. It would have been general, bond, PI. It would have been straight into whatever. Yeah, whatever the levies were for.
But that was, from the beginning, that was the intent, to use those TIF dollars to pay down the bond.
Exactly.
Well,
not the very beginning. But
not the very beginning, but remember, in 2005, when we lost value, we lost tangible, you had the reaction to that, partially of that reaction, was to help the TIF, or to help the PI fund react and to the, especially the construction that we were was being accomplished at that point in time. Because that all was occurring at the same time the TIF agreements were being written and so on. So the decision at that time was to put those TIF dollars right into permanent improvement to pay for infrastructure, to pay for anything that had a 5-year life, instead of putting it in the general fund. Now again, that's up to the board. Wherever you want those dollars, that's a board decision. But the original decision, and I think it's a decision that I would agree with still today, is that those dollars really need to flow into infrastructure and things that have 5-year life, instead of supporting your general fund with those dollars. But again, that's a policy decision that you make. That was the decision that was made at that point in time.
So I had to sign out because I thought that those dollars were, the whole idea was that we were using those dollars to pay down the bond debt that when we did that 27, when
paid,
we converted our certificates.
It paid part of it, not all of it.
But I mean, we did earmark those dollars to pay off our bonds. I mean, we said we're going
to
use those.
Part of that to support the bond if it needed supporting.
Right.
If not, it would be used for anything that had, like, boilers, window replacement.
Brick and mortar stuff.
Brick
right.
and mortar type
right.
decisions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So only part of your PI fund supports the bond issue. Just
I did not realize that. And so those are dollars that...
You buy school buses with?
Right, but I'm just saying that normally PI dollars you couldn't put into the general fund, but those are dollars that if we did need those in the general fund, we could keep in the general fund.
TIF you could.
TIF could,
because
yes.
they actually go through.
Yes.
That's where whatever those decisions are. That's
just new because I thought that all those dollars were allocated to the bond debt, and it was we couldn't really touch.
No,
those.
Part of them are they were there to support if there was a fluctuation. Again, not knowing what was going to happen when we lost 30% of our value to our bonds that were being collected out there, we felt it smart to have that there as a reserve. to pay off bonds if we needed, if we were ever short on bonds, because we weren't sure how the state was going to pay us back. Matter of fact, still not sure.
Okay. Do you have any more questions on that?
I did not.
You okay with that now?
I am.
All right. All right, on to you.
We're going to do 5-year forecast. If we get time, we'll do PI. If not, we'll put that onto it. So I will let that up to you. First off, I want
to.
Well, we'll get to it. It's not one of those that we have to do right now. First off, I want to say the 5-year forecast is a work in progress. And I want to apologize to the board. It's been brought to my attention that a copy of the forecast that has not been approved is out in the public, and I apologize for that. So from now on, I will make sure that I watermark everything that you get until it's approved, and make sure that you get hard copies the night of the board meeting. So I apologize that happened. I'm not sure how or what, but it won't happen again. And I'm not real happy about it. This has not been my night for technology. Definition of a forecast, just thought I'd throw that in there, just so that everybody knows what a forecast is. It's a suggestion. What will happen? Never know. From one day to the next. My boss as a treasurer said if he had a crystal ball, he might know what's going on. I got 20 of each. With comments about how real estate taxes are collected and everything, I thought it'd be a good time to really talk about how taxes are collected, how taxes are figured. House Bill 920, 1976, changed the way that we calculate taxes for the district. In that, it says that you can only collect at the time that the vote is approved. So, anything as of 1976, I believe it's 18.9 mills for our district, is now down to whatever it is. It's down to an effective millage. Those are called outside mills. Now we've got inside mills. 10 mills for the county, we have 4.7 for the Marysville schools. Voted mills are the outside mills. Those are the things that change. Inside mills always stay at 4.7. The other items within the real estate are your inflation, deflation of the values, and then the 1980 constitutional amendment that brought in Class 1, Class 2. So, I gave this example last June, I believe, to the Finance Committee, and I've changed it a little bit because our millage rate for Class 1 has changed a little bit. Value of a house is $150,000. A lot of people say, well, take that times the millage rate of 47.86. That's our voted mills. No. We don't get $7,000 for that $150,000 home. You take that value of the home, $150,000 times 35%, and that's our home, the value, the taxable value of the house. So $52,500 is this example here. Our effective millage rate for 2010, collectible in 2011, is 29.5167 mills. And that's just the operating side. Take that times the 52,500, you get $1,390. You take off that, and I see I messed up on the slide. Deduct your homestead and rollback amounts, and the total tax should be the lesser. You have to take that off, not the 1,390. You just subtract the 157 and the $3. So it's about 1,250, 240 in that range, instead of the 7,000 that a lot of people think that they're doing, that we do. Our valuations. And I picked 4 years here because these are very important years. 4 years, we have agricultural, residential, which is our class one. Remember 1980? We have two classes, ag-res, commercial industrial. That's your class two. Our ag-res back in 2007, our values were $472 million. Our total was $651 million. So the difference was about 100 and whatever it is there. So that's your commercial industrial. I didn't put it in there because it made the chart too hard. If you look at it, really over the past 4 years, we haven't really went up in our total valuation by very much, only by $2 million. If you look at 2007, everybody that was a resident of Marysville at the time probably got a card or a visit from somebody from the county auditor's office doing the triennial, the reappraisal, and saying, I'm here to check your house to see if you have any new additions, done anything major to your house to see what it's really worth. And that was the reappraisal year. Then this last year in 2010 was just an update year, and they just said, send in this card if you had any changes in your values. Now, if you look at our ag res, in 2008 and 2009, it went down. Shouldn't have done anything. We should have stayed right there at $472 million. But due to deflation during that time period, the county auditor did lower some of the areas of the school district and the values of the homes. Now, but, and some of them went even down further if you look at our, just the residential part on the duplicate this year. Agriculture this year has CAUV, and those values were increased by the State Department of Taxation. County auditor didn't have anything to do with it. The school districts didn't have anything to do with it. So those CAUV values went up. That's why we probably see that $10 million increase in our values this year is because of the agricultural land within the district. So in the last 4 years, our values have stayed pretty close to being equal. What that also does, if you look at our millage, look at the voted millage is 43.16. Our class one has went from 19.3 up to 24.8. Now, another thing is, 2008 we had a 4.9 mil levy. So that added the 4.9. You have to, the county auditor has to collect 20 mils. It can't go below that 20 mil floor. This is just the voted millage. So if you add the 4.7, it would not have been below the 20 mil floor. It would have been real close, but class two was higher, so you still had to go for a levy at that point. So with that, look at what it's doing now with the voted between class one and class two. Class two keeps going up and class one goes down. So that means that we've got less value in class two a little bit, or more value in one. It just, as your values go up, your effective rates go down. So we saw that on that chart. When we look at what's calculated then, these are our calculated taxes. The inside millage, our general fund total, and our current operating, which is just, that's the operating, the outside millage. They call that current operating. So that's the difference between inside and outside. Doug, you had a question last time. Doesn't the inside millage, don't we get a lot of money extra? You can see now. We don't get a whole lot of money.
I didn't say a lot.
Well, but we don't get hardly anything extra.
Right.
When you take 4.7 mils, which is really 0.0047, it's not on a on $52,000.
Yeah, I think the only point I was making that when new homes move in that we get additional millage or additional revenue.
Yeah, it doesn't go up very much. In fact, it went up, down, up, you know, so
right.
it fluctuates. It's not a whole lot though. So that is the real estate. I know it's a lot. The notes, if you've read the notes are have a lot more information on how this is done. So Larry looked at me and he said, you've got to be kidding me. But when he saw this today. So TPP, let's talk a little bit about TPP. I think it's our favorite three-initialed word around here. But I went back to 2000 on this graph. 2000, that's the start of the, there was a good growth there. If you went back to even further back into the 90s, there was a lot of growth. Then between 2003 and 2004, we had a good sized growth. That was a change of a couple things of maybe a business coming in. I think there was something that happened at Honda. There was a few things there. 2004 is the valuation that the state used for House Bill 66. But if you look at it, 2005, we had more growth. We didn't get any of that growth in the TPP replacement. So our values went up, and then they started slowly going down until 2010. They're no longer there. Now, PUP, or Public Utility Personal, which is the only thing that we see on that line anymore for tangible property tax in the forecast, it went came down. There were some changes in public utility property laws on what they could be. They've stayed pretty even keel. I mean, there's a $5 million difference there from 2001 to 2010. Those are your lines. Those are your telephone lines, your electrical lines, and things like that. So those are your tangible, your personal property.
I'm now finally getting this. But when you guys, when you're saying valuation, does this mean that the way that that TPP worked was this valuation was added and then the millage was, would get the voted millage against that?
We would, if you would take our full voted millage against that $207 million, yes.
I knew we got the dollars. I just didn't understand why it was, you were referring to its valuation, but that's how we.
That's how it is. Millage, voted millage. Tangible personal property tax was on voted millage, not on any effective rate. It was on voted millage. So the $207 million there, what that value is what was done, was set for in place at the time of House Bill 66. Now, what would have happened for the district had that not ever been put in place? We see that there was already a $2 million increase in 1 year, times our voted millage. That's what we're saying is we aren't getting any of that growth that we had been seeing. Even if you go back to 2000 to 2003, there was about a $15,000 increase there. There were $15 million increase there in those 4 years. So even if we got a $2 to $3 million increase every year, we would be a lot better off than what we are now because we are frozen in time as of 2004 on that replacement.
We've known that part. That has been the case since 2005, right?
We've known that that has been the case since 2005.
Well,
that we would at some point we would be losing it all. However, at the same time, cap tax was supposed to replace
right.
those dollars,
sure.
And that's what's up in the air right now. Okay, that takes care of the real estate intangible. So let's talk about how we get our state funding. Our state funding is based off our average daily membership, the number of students that we serve. But it's not our enrollment numbers. Our enrollment numbers are the kids in the seats. Our ADM is they take those kids in the seats, and we get there's a multiplier for kids that go to High Point. There's a multiplier for the students that are here in the district that are attending any High Point classes. So those areas are how we get that number. The other thing that we have to take into consideration is our average daily membership. When we're looking at students going out to community schools, those students, if they're there for 10 days, we get charged just for the 10 days. So that number can fluctuate at the State Department. And so we've got that first week of October, they take the snapshot, and this is what we're funded on. Since that snapshot, we have received a lot more students, almost 100, since that snapshot in time. Our enrollment has went up since then. The 53-55 is what the snapshot in time says. So our projection right now is about, on ADM-wise, I'm looking at 55-47. On enrollment-wise, it's going to be more. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
How long has this been in place, this ADM, I'll call it, evaluation of how many kids are here?
As long as I can remember.
Yeah, you've always had ADM.
But it just, possibly.
The problem you have is that public schools, you get paid for what the kids that are in your seats in October. And if you grow after October, those are unfunded kids. I mean, you could have multiple kids come in with all kinds of issues, all kinds of needs, and so on. Those are unfunded. Unless you exceed, I think it's 3% or something like that.
2%.
And then you get some backfill of that. But
is there any discussions at the...
But charter schools get paid by the month. You know, they report their attendance by month. And so whoever's in the seat by month is different funding. So for us, we lose funding if a student comes in October. Let's say they come in October, we don't get any money for them. And they go out in November to a charter school. We send our state support for that student with them, even though we didn't get any. And that's...
This just doesn't... I hear you. It just doesn't seem right.
And again, you're sending your full state support, $5,700,
right,
that follows that student, and we didn't get any of it. At best, you know, if that student got counted, we would get about $2,300 for that student-ish, and $5,700 follows that student.
Exactly.
That's the reason why there's such an outcry about charter schools, and again, my issue is competition. Let kids go wherever they want. But the playing field for the funding needs to be level. You know, if you're going to have the kids get more funding that go out, then the funding mechanism needs to be revisited. And again, it really needs to, because, you know, it's all started up, and they're still operating off of an antiquated ADM system where you're getting funded. In October, if a kid is absent one day, unexcused, we only get funded for 80% of that kid, even though he's there all year long.
So
but he was unexcused absence.
So who do we talk to?
You know the people.
should I go get a prescription and talk to him?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a, you know, again, the frustration is that it's so complex. It's complex for those of us that have done it for years and years. And to explain it out, I mean, it seems unreasonable, but that's the way it works.
I knew there was an explanation. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah.
It's just...
I've been told by legislators that they aren't taking our money, even though they really are, because we're still getting state foundation payments. But if we were getting, not having that money go out to those students, we would be getting more of our own state foundation payments. So it really, they look at it as they aren't taking our money.
We spend out a little over $500,000 out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For that, for charter schools. Out. And if they were here, we'd
we get it.
So.
All right, sorry.
That's okay.
No, that's it's complex.
It's tough. I mean, a few years ago, it used to have two counts. You used to have a February and an October for 1 year, and that about drove everybody crazy. So they went back to the one count week. It's just too hard with the systems that they've got in place.
It seems like with the technology, you just track every kid with GPS, and you know where he's at.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
You know?
Yeah.
You've got a cell phone.
I agree.
That's where the money goes. That's where he's at.
He's his brother.
So there's... There you go. You might get rich, John. State funding, we have our unrestricted grants and aid, which is our state foundation dollars. Those are the kids per day. It's based, our special ed extra goes in there, our transportation money goes in there that we get from the state, our special ed transportation goes in there. Anything for within that ADM that counts for goes into those pots. Not one.
That goes in property tax.
Yeah. So that's our state foundation money. Then it shows in there, it comes out our stimulus money, but that you see in restricted grants and aids. So stimulus dollars this year in fiscal year 11 in May, I thought we were going to, or in May we're getting more than what we got in October, so that helps out a little bit there. We're getting a little bit more than what we thought. And then next year it's dropped, and that's because our jobs, that has jobs money. So they're in restricted, you have stimulus dollar, you have your jobs, the jobs bill from the federal stimulus dollars, and you have career tech in there. So those are the areas that you see in there. So our jobs money, that was a big item with some of the legislators. Why haven't school districts used that jobs money? We don't have to spend it until September of 2012. Stimulus dollars are going away. The ARRA money's going away. So that will help pay for those teachers that are being paid through the ARRA special needs that will have to come back into our general fund. So that's what we have the jobs money set aside for. And we really don't know for sure if those numbers are even close, because we're still waiting on budget. So when the governor set his budget, I have the governor's budget set into this. I do not have the House part set. According to theirs, we might have another $75,000 in fiscal year 12 and maybe another $90,000 in fiscal year 13, but I did not put that in there because that's, who knows. It was just too hard to keep going. Okay. This is our favorite thing to talk about, is TPP. And I've got three columns there, October, May, and the governor. So October and this year, you can see that everybody's are right there the same together. Next year, October, and in fiscal year 13, looks like we're going to get a lot more money. This is what we're talking about as the reimbursement. Hold harmless payments. We were supposed to have been held harmless through 2013, so we can make our adjustments, and they gave us a couple more years to figure out. We are one of the top schools in the district, in the state, that are affected by tangible personal property tax. So we needed some extra time. We didn't get it with the governor's budget. We didn't get it with the House budget. Those bars in 2012 and 13 are 2% less each year. So that's a total of 4% that we're losing over the next 2 years. Now, you look at 14, it looks like it dips down a long way, a lot further than any of the other ones. And it does, because of the fact that that's where it should have been originally. They gave us 2 extra years, and they said, no, let's hold that off, 2 extra years, see what's going to happen. They were supposed to get a committee together to work on it to see what we can do for the districts that are very affected by TPP. That never happened. So 14 and 15, it was, I believe, 1/17th each year. So 14 would have been like 3/17th, and then 15 is 4/17ths or 4 5/17ths in that realm. Fiscal year, and the May, as you can see, 14 and 15, what I have in there is the House version. They're saying at the end of fiscal year 13, if you lose 4%, that's all you're going to lose. We're going to keep that held harmless for you for forever. And this is only a budget, so that means that that can be changed after that budget's over in fiscal year 13.
Kind of like the blue bars were?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the governor's budget takes out 2% every year, and in our case, it's a 9-year 2% each year, and it goes out 9 years. So those are the hold harmless payments.
Do you have that in the forecast, the House version of that? Or
I have the House version of this just because of the fact that let's see where it's at. This is an easy one to fix, and I did put that in there. Yes. Other revenue, those lines, that line is just, it's our rental fees, our tuition, pay to participate fees, some of the tax increment financing. It's there's a payment from the city that we put into general fund. It's not the TIF, but it's another payment that goes into the general fund. We do get Medicare reimbursement for all our psychs and nurses. They fill out forms. This past year it was over $50,000, and I haven't looked at it this year to see where it's at, but that the sale of the notes are part of other revenue. So that's our revenue. So here's our revenue for this year. Our property tax is 40%. Our property tax allocation is 20%. And our tangible personal is 4%. So between those three bars, it's 64% of our revenue. Next year, it changes a little. It's 41.18 for property tax allocation and 4% for tangible. So a little bit change here, there. It's all right there in the same area. But from fiscal year 11 to 12, we do have a $994,000 difference in revenue coming in, and that's mainly from our TPP, the unrestricted, restricted, and then the property tax allocation. So, because this is just an amendment to our first projection, we really haven't changed anything in our expenditures. As you can see, our personnel services are $28 million this year, and those are that's salaries. The benefits are $10,854,000. And purchase services, just so that everybody understands what that is, the biggest chunk of purchase services are our utilities. Attorney fees of any sort, tuition going out, that's where we pay. The other big chunk in there is our tuition going out. Our community school tuition is paid through there, through a purchase service. So those are the things. And all the remainder are pretty self-explanatory. Supplies are supplies. Those are our paper and all those kind of things. Yes, sir.
Does this take into account the 19 folks we're not replacing?
In fiscal year 12, it does, yes.
Okay, and that's in your forecast?
That is in the forecast.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
That is in the forecast.
Was there anything else from that reduction list that's in your forecast?
The items that are in the forecast for the actual reductions are the 18 positions that are not in 2012. We have 22 that will be leaving. We're thinking about 4 that we'll be replacing.
Okay.
And then the other thing that's in that salary personnel is the 27 pays that we discussed at the April meeting, where we had to do the flip-flop of which fiscal year it actually hit. And so that's, if we didn't have that, it'd be even less in that. So that shows that.
How much
that.
Is that again? I mean, that, cause
the 27 pays?
Yeah. How much is that?
It's about $1 million.
It's like 1.2 or something.
And
that
only gets shifted from the expenditure side, not the revenue side, right?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So those are the changes. The notes are very self, they go through it. Your notes, the note sheets show that on, even more so on your note sheet. It shows the $1.2 million is going out for the buyout. $1.2 million basically is the 27 pays. So those sort of just offset each other. And then next year we have, in the fiscal year 13, we have the staff that took the buyout for that year, the 13 staff members have that going out. And then we have all of them being replaced at this point. We did that in the forecast. We haven't changed that, but that's another year out. So we've got a little time to carry it through. So that with those changes of the 22 staff members being taking the early retirement, that does give us a positive balance for this coming fiscal year.
Now we're going to start deficit spending next year, right? FY12.
We won't start in. Yeah.
Big time next year.
Yeah, big time next year. Yeah. So, this is what we see right now is going to happen for the next 4 years for the district. Remember that the forecast will change from the day that it's put on the paper to the external and internal influences that affect the district. And I can't say that enough, that if we get told one thing different at the state budget, it'll affect this forecast in some way. There's one thing in the budget that we don't have in here. It's the 2% on the retirement. That's not in there. Don't know if it'll happen where the employees pay 12%, districts pay 12%. That's not in here.
That was stripped out of the House bill, wasn't it?
It was stripped out of the House bill, but we keep hearing rumblings at the Senate that it may go back in. So we're trying to stay on top of all that if at all possible. And it's very difficult. We're in constant contact with the Representative Burke and Senator Gilmore. So.
Okay. Well, that does not paint a pretty picture.
No, it does not.
So you said for the buyout for next year, you don't have that included in the forecast?
Yes, it is.
The buyout for next year is?
Yes.
And we're assuming that all 13 of those people will come back.
We'll be replacing.
We're replacing all of those. That's
for the following
that's
year.
The assumption in the forecast.
Yeah, so there's all your expenditures for
yeah,
the buyouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Line 3.1 shows it all.
Now, again, we're assuming that all those folks taking the retirement come back. But if you assume that they would be absorbed, then you could subtract that away from that 37 or 40.
Is that another 12? 13 in
fiscal year
13.
Correct. So if you hold them in there, then it's still, you're going to have to do something potentially, if you just look at it that way, that's a way to pull the budget back in. I'm not recommending it one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's just the way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think to his point, that's to cut teachers.
Correct. And again, that's not the issue. Is more, that's what it would take to pull the budget back.
Correct. Did you have anything?
Actually, I just They're not all teachers, though, are they?
No,
no,
they're not.
13.
There's a building principal in there. There's a
for this coming year, there's aides, there's building principal, there's bus driver, food service.
Custodian.
Which doesn't show in the forecast. Two custodians.
Four aides.
Yeah, there's, yeah.
Well, next year, they're all teachers except one.
Yes, next year.
Oh,
the
next
following year,
year
they're all teachers except for one,
yeah.
One building administrator.
All right.
I have a
lot of questions on it, but we don't have to do that one tonight. All right, so we'll make that a top of our our treasurer's report for next time. Were there any other questions on the forecast? Any changes you'd like to make to it?
Yes. You make changes right now. If you want to make changes, you have the...
It's right there.
You got about 5 minutes.
$1.2 million.
Right, Jim.
No, no.
Take one.
Mm-hmm. I will be glad to take $1 million check.
The buyout for mid after.
Yes.
But the replacement is almost as much.
For that. Right, for that first.
Other question. The what is that you have to sign to authorize?
The 412 certificate?
That's it, 412. What's the criteria for that?
You have to have money. You can't sign it off on a negative balance.
Okay.
So, like, if you're going to sign a contract for any district,
sure.
you can only go as far out as you have, as your forecast shows, that you have a positive balance.
Okay, so the 412 isn't like an annual thing; it's whenever you do a contract.
It is
a
contract. Yes.
Okay.
Either
right.
Contract, if it's.
It can be multiple years.
It can be multiple years,
right.
And there's even one in the budget for if you are doing a 3-year contract, say if you're going to do a contract for copiers and you need to sign that. If you can prove that is going to save the district money, if you have a negative balance, you can sign a 412 certificate now. That is, they put that into the budget language. Whether it'll stay, I don't know, but that's a good thing. Yes, that is new. That's why it's in the budget.
Some are buried in the 4,000 pages.
Yes, and it's buried, but it's one of those things that, you know, that it gives districts a way to save money if they didn't have that option.
Sure. Right. All right, were there any other questions on the forecast? Any other questions on items submitted by the treasurer? If not, then I move that we accept the items submitted, items A through D, by the treasurer. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
The next item is a slip-up by our bond attorney. He double-ticked the $50,000 out, and we only were supposed to sell notes, and our bond agent sold them for $595,000, and our forecast, our resolution last month was for $545,000, so we need to just amend the resolution to $595,000, because that's what we got the money for. We already have the money.
Gotcha. Any questions?
So how much trouble are we in for that?
None yet, I don't think.
An honest mistake.
So moved?
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 9 is the membership of the Ohio High School Athletic Association. It's my recommendation that we once again participate as a member for the 2011-12 school year.
I'll ask, what's that cost?
Well, if you don't do it, you can't participate in any athletics, so that could solve part of the problem.
Another problem, huh?
You just don't, you know, if you're going to participate, you don't have an option.
Really?
I mean, is there a cost to it?
Is there a cost?
I don't think there's a cost. I think they get it from having that. Yeah. I think they pay for everything through the tournaments and everything,
correct.
The gate receipts and that kind of stuff.
But if we don't buy a ticket, we can't get in. Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're not a member, you can't participate in any athletic activities. Please.
All right, I'm okay with that.
Is that a motion?
Sure, I'm able to accept that.
I'll second.
All right, move to second.
Mr. Freudenberg.
She called your name.
Oh, you did? Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
I was commenting on a couple of athletes down here at the end, moving to participate in the athletic section.
Item 10 is a resolution for career readiness and fiscal literacy curriculum. This is a policy that the board is required to have. It's a change in state law. It requires us to teach career readiness and fiscal literacy as part of grade 7 and 8.
And you sent us the curriculum for both of those. Isn't that what you sent, the documentation?
I sent the documentation, yeah.
And that was just for 7th and 8th grade?
7th and 8th
grade. But this is in the high school also?
Well, you can move it into high school, but the language has to be for 7th and 8th grade. Some places have the 9th graders part of the middle school and so on. That's what this is.
It's pretty much a boilerplate resolution.
It's pretty much a boilerplate resolution, but it gets us...
I mean, we have to do it.
You have to do it.
I get it. I was just asking.
The curriculum looked interesting.
It did. Would you like to sit in?
I might.
Balance your checkbook?
I can do that already. I'd like to find another career.
Any other questions? So moved.
Second.
Moved in second.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Lassiter?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 11 is the elementary handbooks recommended for 11 and 12. I recommend that those be approved.
Are the fees part of that? Or
the
are they
fees
separate
are
item?
Later.
They're a separate item.
They're a separate item.
I did not have an opportunity to read that handbook. Are there any changes to it this year?
No.
I didn't see any. They weren't highlighted for me, so I didn't
see
it.
They weren't any. They weren't, I mean, there may have been some typing issues in there, some words changed, but
that
nothing is significant in there.
So moved.
Second. Moved in second. Roll call.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 12 is a discussion of the proposed reductions. Before you are the reductions that I'm recommending. We've had several meetings about possibilities, had some meetings in this building about, you know, some recommendations and so on, and about what we'd recommend, can we do this instead of that and so on. And Jeff asked that I prepare my recommendations, and that's what these are. After looking at the items that I have in front of me and the places where we can dive in and take a significant look, and working with staff and working with the building administrators, these were the items. Let me just kind of go down through them because the staff is the bigger part of that. Again, we started several months ago when we offered a retirement incentive. And the reason for that was kind of anticipation of the stimulus money going away. At that point, it wasn't necessarily the TPP going away, it was the stimulus money. How once the federal stimulus money went away, we knew we were going to have to draw back a budget because those dollars we've had the last 2 years, and we knew those were going to go away. So again, we offered the retirement incentive knowing that if folks took that, then there would be, you would be replacing those folks, generally speaking, a lesser salary. So we knew that there would be a potential savings there, and we hoped that there would be. by doing that. But as I said earlier, I did not anticipate not replacing as many as we're looking at not replacing. But generally, it's five high school staff members that would be absorbed. And that would be one math position, one social studies position, and three, we're not sure exactly where they're going to be as of yet. We have the dean of students position that is one of those to be decided how we're going to do it. We have a peer tutor that is part of that, and one other position. So we're still kind of sorting out how those will get absorbed at the high school. But there will be, generally speaking, if they come out of a department, there will be just fewer sections. There will be fewer sections offered. Class sizes will be bigger. We're trying to not cut kids out of classes right now. The classes generally would be over the rest of the department and absorb that way. Two gifted positions, two gifted elementary gifted teachers. In the governor's proposal, gifted was eliminated, that funding was eliminated. The House put those staff members back, or that funding back in, not necessarily staff members. We spend about $150,000, or we get about $150,000 from the state, give or take, for gifted education. It cost us an awful lot more to run our gifted education than that. So we're looking at options. If it remains in the House budget and remains in the Senate budget, then we'll see. But right now, those two gifted teachers that are out now in the class or working with kids would be absorbed into classrooms, and they actually would be absorbed into Creekview. Three elementary positions.
I got a real quick question. Yeah. What does that do for your gifted coordinators then, if you're doing away with two gifted teachers? Does that shift the coordinator job back to the principal, or are we still going to have?
We still would have, our Raven Elementary principal would still do the gifted identification and gifted service there. We would have no staff, right, but it would be done through classroom teachers and the other building administrators.
Okay.
So basically, you're absorbing some of that service back. You're just doing it differently.
Okay.
Three elementary teachers would be absorbed there. Essentially, that is a couple of right now. So kindergarten is low right now. It's pulling back population, the incoming population. We're able to absorb one position out of that, one reading position out of that, and then another position just because some of the enrollment moves on to another building. Two at Creekview would be absorbed. One of those would be our, from our standpoint, would be our technology position that we teach as part of our rotation out there. That person would be taken out of that rotation and placed into a classroom. So we would have no technology extra.
So does that fall on the classroom teachers then?
That would fall on the classroom teachers. And then one other staff member there, and then one at the middle school also. And yet that's yet to be determined exactly where that would be. Also be four aides. Now there will be five aides, actually, as of resignation. As of last week, one custodian. And again, on the custodial staff, as I told you before, we expect an awful lot out of our custodians now. I mean, they're responsible for about 33,000 to 34,000 square feet per person currently. That's a lot to do on a daily basis. So by absorbing that position, you're actually asking more of the folks that remain. So we're going to give it a shot and see.
Where's that one coming out of?
That comes out of I'm not sure exactly where that would come out of. Right now it comes out of a portion of buildings, actually. A little bit out of a couple buildings. Edgewood, Peakview, and Mill Valley. And then one bus route. Again, we have a retirement there. We're going to try to go to 33 routes. We feel as though we could do that. But at this point, we may not have any choice but to try to do that just because of the costs associated there. So those are your big changes there. So you have a combination of not only what the retirement center did, but also the additional savings from staff positions could potentially be saved.
So that's $1 million in savings.
That's $1 million right there. That's basically your loss of TPP, if you want to look at it that way. Now, your other consideration...
For 1 year.
For 1 year.
Okay.
For 1 year.
Sorry, I need to make that point.
Yeah. On your others, these are just considerations. And I'm not going to ask you to make a choice tonight because I think we... got to chew this around a little bit and consider it. I think I'd like to do a couple public sessions around these over the next couple weeks and come back. I think I put in the notes first Monday in June or could be in that potential time so that we have an opportunity to actually meet and you guys have a chance to kind of consider these and talk them over. But one of them is really a reduction of staff for the following year. And again, I only put that in there just to kind of set the stage because that's about what you're going to need to pull the budget back. Again, whether we accomplish that in other ways, yet to be seen, but just know that that's one option. And I think it's the option that you have to look at because if you don't do some of the other kinds of things, that's what you're looking at.
What's that? I mean, you say 40 staff. What's that look like? I mean, that's obviously program cuts at that point.
Yeah, well, I don't know what it looks like.
We have 13 retiring.
You have 13 retiring. You can't.
Well, even if you don't, you get rid of even those 13, you're gonna end up cutting into some of your programs.
Correct. You would have to go into non-mandated service. That's where you have to go, and you're required to have 21 credits to graduate from high school. You're required to offer math, English, social studies, science, all those kinds of things. You would have to go into non-mandated services. And that would be areas like technology or business or vocational courses and so on. Music, art, phys ed at some levels. You have to have phys ed to graduate from high school. And that's the only extra requirement outside of the other grade levels. You have to offer it, but you don't have to have a specialist to teach them. So those would be decisions that you'd have to make. And again, I just for the matter of making some decisions, I think that decision, if nothing else occurs between now and January, you have to make some decisions by that point and call out what those positions are by that point and by April make some final decisions just from a planning standpoint.
How do you get at the $57,000 per employee average?
That's just the average that we've used.
For the staff. So it's any staff.
You have a salary plus all of the benefits.
Once you take out the salary, that takes the benefit portion out of the forecast too. So it automatically pulls that amount out. So if you take so much out in your salary, it's going to take those benefits that follow that person right out of our forecast.
Right, but for this figure that's on the sheet, $57,000 per employee, if you included salary plus benefits, that seems like a really low number to me, considering that.
That's salary only, Tracy.
Okay.
The other option, and the other thing is the additional $50 pay to play, which would take us to $200.
So wait a minute, I want to go back to that question, I'm sorry. So if you're assuming that's $57,000, then what would be the additional savings for salaries and benefits?
About 14% more than
okay,
that.
So it wouldn't be, so you wouldn't look at 40 staff, you look at something a little bit less than that because it's based on...
Jeff, this from a planning standpoint, use that as your average right
okay.
now. Yeah. I think that's just, use averages.
Okay.
Now we can pick and at that
no,
number
I would just
later, but right now use averages.
Okay.
Because again, that's what how we do from a budgeting standpoint, it just works better. And then as you grind down into that, I think you can fine tune it and kind of see where you are. But right now, for this purpose and this exercise,
okay.
I think we just need to focus in on averages.
Gotcha.
Again, that's what we do constantly, and then we'll get down into the nitty gritty
okay.
and say, all right, this is what it really is. But right now, just use that one as.
But this makes it seem rather alarming when you're talking 40, and if that's not an accurate number, I know you're using averages and just trying to get a feel for it, but that makes it seem more alarming than it most likely is going to be once you have the number for the salary plus the benefits, what the actual
it's
position is.
It's
going to
be in that neighborhood. It's going to be in that neighborhood.
Okay.
Because, again, what you're talking about, you're not talking about all teachers. You're not talking about all
that.
Professional staff. So you're going to use averages, and some folks don't make that amount of money. And so, again, hopefully you're right. Hopefully it's not that. But that's about where it is. It's going to be in that neighborhood. The extracurricular part of it is something I don't like. I didn't like when we had to move to $150. But I also understand from where I have to sit, I think your curricular programs come first. Your extracurricular is extra. So when you're looking at teachers' jobs versus other types of positions, I think you have to consider that as part of your savings or part of your reductions. The other is the elimination of coaching and activity positions. We've gone through this administratively a bit.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. By increasing that $50, what's that dollar amount come to? I guess
about $50,000.
Okay, thank you. I just didn't see that. Thank you.
The elimination of coaching activity positions, we're recommending, or I would be recommending that we eliminate 16 high school coaching and activity positions as we cut across quite a few activities, actually. And at the middle school, I'm giving you some options there. Minimally, it would be the reduction of 8 positions at this building. It would be both coaching and activity positions here. And I gave you the numbers for complete elimination of seventh grade activities and also the suspension of all the activities. Depends on, again, how far back you want to pull your budget at this point in time.
So I'm assuming then you have a list of which actual coaches or activities that you're wanting or you think are
for that first
a little one, heavier.
For the 16 high school coaching.
Yeah, it actually kind of touches each area throughout your activities.
Is that just upping the participant to coach ratio, or is
yeah.
it actually doing away with an activity?
It doesn't do away with the activity.
Okay,
it
that's what I'm asking.
It ups the level of the adult versus the
okay,
the participant.
And it doesn't stop them from having volunteers.
It doesn't stop them from having volunteers or the boosters picking up that portion of that person that we're reducing. I've been asked that already, so again, that's a policy decision you would have to make. But we do that now. Some positions are funded by outside groups. Extended time contracts, we've also gone through there and taken a look at extended time contracts, and some of those pull back a little bit more than others, but overall we're recommending that it's about a 30% reduction in extended time contracts. Extended time contracts are for individuals that work outside of the typical school year. in activities related to operation during the school year, such as your guidance counselors and librarians and so on.
Now, haven't we already approved extended time contracts
nope.
this year?
Nope, you have not. You have not renewed them all.
We haven't renewed them.
You haven't renewed
them. When do those get approved?
Either June or July.
Those are for the additional days.
Those are for the additional days. Correct.
So then, based on this figure, what the district or what you're expecting to pay is 100% would be $170,000. And so you're just recommending a decrease of 30%.
It's a pullback of so many days, basically, that aren't being worked.
Not each person is getting the same number of days pulled back. Depends on the position.
To answer your question?
Yes.
All right.
Six is the reduction of summer workers. Over the past several years, we've used about 22 summer workers for lawn work, painting, testing, summer testing results to come back in, and we've got to get those mailings out, et cetera, et cetera. We're actually pulling that back. I think we have 13 summer employees that will be participating, so that would be a reduction of 30.
Tornado sirens are going off?
Going off. It's really bad. Okay, we need to get to the gym.
Go to the hallway.
We're practicing tornado drills.